way to raise these very broad issues. And we always invite into our midst some villagers who have agreed to play the role of one or another of the characters in the story. And these roles, I should say, they all want me to say this, may or may not be, may or may not be, roles that are completely congruent with their own views. So some of them may be acting, and some of them may be typecast, maybe really just saying what they think. And they don't have to tip their hand on that. They will start us out to sort of model a mini conversation about the narrative, and then everybody gets to jump in, not only gets to, but is encouraged to jump in, and converse among yourselves or with one of the people who have spoken, and we hope that you'll all be here with a sense of some of the issues involved in this very broad topic of sports and society. So I'm going to reread one more time the narrative that you've heard, and then we'll hear from some of our distinguished guests who figure into this narrative. And I'll have them raise their hand as I mention their names in the narrative so you know who these distinguished people are who have come to us from St. Aditus Christian College. And indeed, 4 years ago, St. Aditus Christian College appointed a new athletic director. And now, after decades of obscurity, the St. Aditus Saints, that's their nickname, the Saints, have begun to win, achieving national prominence in men's basketball and in women's gymnastics. Most of the alums are really thrilled with all of this. The board and the president love the increase in enrollment, and the capital campaign is going wild. If Holden only had a team, we'd probably have the capital campaign already met. But there are some people at St. Aditus who are worried. For example, the Dean of Students, Soren Stiff. You want to raise your hand, Soren? The Dean of Students counsels weeping students who have been cut from teams. He notes an increase in student barbarity around games. He laments the fact that increasing numbers of athletes are afflicted with drug and eating disorders, and he therefore wonders whether such hyper-competitive behavior could ever be considered even remotely Christian. The Dean of the Chapel, Emma Slowfoot, she is, thinks that sports are becoming a pagan religion. She fumes over the fact that the recent NCAA basketball tournament games conflicted with Maundy Thursday and Easter Vigil services. Now, Coach Victor Weedy thinks that these complaints are petty and unchristian. And student athlete MJ Manley, there's MJ, he exults in the newfound athletic prowess of the school. And if we can quote MJ for a moment, quote, "I thought Christians were supposed to love all things that are excellent, not to seek mediocrity. The deans are simply jealous because sports have finally brought spirit to the Saints when the chapel program couldn't," unquote. Can the Saints sustain a winning sports program without being corrupted by the negatives of sports in our culture? Is competitive zeal in pursuit of national glory finally at odds with Christianity? Well, apparently Dean Soren Stiff thinks it is. So, Dean Stiff, could we hear just a few more comments in your own words about your views of this matter?
Well, I'm not sure I should model a conversation in this forum because I might get a little preachy. I'm so passionate about my views on this topic. And I take my starting point as the fact that we are a Christian college. And therefore, as a Christian college, we are called to give glory to God, to model the gospel and the kingdom of God in all things that we do. And so my perspective on this is purely a theological perspective. And I cannot help but feel that if I'm going to preach, I'm going to have three good points for why this current sports program does not model for us the gospel of Jesus Christ. The first one is that the gospel of inclusivity has been replaced by a gospel of exclusivity in this particular program. I remember the days when the old athletic director was here, and we had a policy where everybody who tried out for a team would make the team and be able to participate. participate in all of the games. If sports has any merit, it should be a place in which any person of any kind of ability should be able to try their hand and exercise what budding gifts they may or may not have. Now, true, we did lose a lot of those games. We never had a winning season, but the kids learned how to work together. They learned how to be able to face the problems of defeat. And in our society, we are not all elite. We are not all prima donnas, and we have to know how to be able to encounter defeat. Well, the kingdom of the inclusive and marginalized ones has been replaced by the kingdom of the elite. And now we have these hand-selected persons from around the country who are not even part of our own community. They are strangers to us, and they come in, and they have attitudes. They refuse to study. They drink whatever they want. They think that we should cater to them. And our whole entire campus is now reverberating around these elite ones, these prima donnas. And I think that's a violation of the gospel, to be sure. Second violation is that the gospel of justification by grace has been replaced by the gospel of justification by works. And this is a good Lutheran understanding, as I understand it. Our worth now, under this new program, is measured by achievement. We measure the success of our school now by our enrollment, by the money, the dollars that are coming in. We measure our success of this program by how many games that we win. Whereas the gospel of Jesus Christ does not place our worth on our achievements, but on the dignity of who we are. In a society in which we are measured by how much money we have in our checkbooks, we as a Christian school should counter that the particular tendency instead of perpetuating it. And the third point that I have is, is that the gospel of compassion and goodwill has been replaced by a gospel of violence and ill will. I have seen mascots and star players of other schools burned in effigies at pep rallies. I have seen Christian people in the stands yell, "Kill the others," and "Murder those people." I have seen an entire crowd erupt in spontaneous applause when some poor soul from another team misses a basket at the very end. Think about that poor person and how they have to live with that all. Instead, we are now violent. We wish ill will on all of these people. This is not a spirit of the gospel. This is a demonic spirit, and we are perpetuating it throughout our particular program. Now, in conclusion, I have to admit that we are now having much more money and much more enrollment in our school. I agree with that. But if I might just share a short parable by my namesake, another Lutheran, Soren Kierkegaard, he observed about how a beer vendor once would buy beer at 5 cents and sell it for 4 cents. And when somebody asked him, "How in the world can you make money on that?" he said, "How could I not? Look at all the people that have shown up. We have lots of people that have shown up, but we have watered down the gospel to get them here." And I have to say that any kind of a program that embodies exploitation, competition, exclusivity, and works righteousness violates the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And I should remind you, that was not the dean of the chapel. That was the dean of the students. You got a sermon there. But Coach Weedy, I think we ought to give you a chance here to respond directly to your colleague here.
Well, yeah, it could be a case of throwing out the baby and the bathwater. You can eat too much ice cream, and if you don't keep ice cream in the freezer, it'll spoil. I mean, you gotta do things right. I think even holding bread, which is good for you, if you cover it with brown sugar, you're going to ruin what it is. And I agree with lots of what he says about exploitation of athletes and so on. But on the other hand, let me tell you a story about a kid named Stretch, who transferred to Adidas University. And where he was before, he had been exploited. One day he missed the winning free throw, or what would have been the winning free throw in a game. They lost the game, therefore. And all the way home, his coach went into a tirade, and his teammates kind of ostracized him. And for a week in practice, he didn't pass him the ball. Well, he just got fed up. Well, he transferred to Adidas University. And I remember his first game, he went 0 for 10 the first half of the game. And during the halftime break, his teammate said to him, "It's a temporary slump. Keep shooting." Well, that kid all of a sudden went out and went nuts the second half, because he found people that believed in him and didn't give up on him and didn't berate him for his so-called failures. So we kept the baby and we did throw out the bathwater, that bad attitude stuff. But that isn't all sports. And we have another kid, I think, that's a good example. is one of our athletes had to go to his sister's first communion. He had to miss two practices. I said, take a ball, get some shots in while you're there. And he went to his sister's first communion. And he got into shooting, and he came back, and he was ready for the game. And I don't think we exploited that athlete or that athlete's relationships with his families. And the last, I guess, illustration is that after our great success this winter in the NCAA tournament, the athletes had a party, and their parents were there, and girlfriends and some other close supporters were at that party, and no pun intended, supporters, did you get that? The joke's no good if you have to explain it. I came to that party late, and one of our, it was Stretch, in fact, the kid who had transferred, was sitting on the couch, and this was 12 o'clock at night, and the game had been over at 9:30, and he had his uniform on still. And I said, Stretch, what's the deal? He looked at me, and he had tears in his eyes, and this is the kid who transferred from a real painful situation. And he said, Coach, I just want to keep my uniform on as long as I can. The reason we won is because we got guys who love each other. We can't throw out the baby in the bathwater. Sports are a great thing, and the idiots who want to exploit it, and on the other hand, the idiots who want to get rid of it all, have to be careful, I think, of how they value the whole thing.
Well, thank you, Chris. This sounds powerful. The argument here is that really Adidas College has prospered because, not in spite or not counter to, but because its teams have an ethos that grows directly out of a kind of Christian ethos, and that the people who are hypercritical of it, I believe the quote was, might be idiots. And now we turn to the dean of the chapel, Emma Slowfoot, and I think that the idiot issue is important, and we might quote now the motto of Adidas College, if the shoe fits, wear it. Wonder. Wonder here, Dean Slowfoot, whether you might fall into that category.
I've fallen into a few things. I wanted to preface my remarks first to Dean Stiff. I really appreciate the homily you delivered. And I would like to talk with you after this about speaking in chapel. You can listen to what I think now you are prepared. And Coach, I have to say, it's a touching story about the young man who needed to go to his sister's first communion, and you say, go ahead and go and take the basketball with you. But this comes right to my point. I think a student with a basketball at a first communion is disrupted. I think telling our students that, dribbling in the narthex or the Holy Eucharist, this really is my point. I think what we see at our college now is a generation that we have not seen before, a generation of college students who, when they were younger, their Christian faithful parents believed that it was just all right if Jimmy and Janie missed church, Sunday school, catechetical programs, youth group, in order to participate in storage, in sports. To participate in shorts in sports. I know how many of the student athletes at our school were part of soccer programs that had their meets, games, competitive events, tournaments, on Sundays. And so we have a generation of people, children, students raised in the church who think that worship is what you do when you don't have anything else to do. The Christian education is something you participate in if your team is not meeting. Is not getting together for a rehearsal. I'm not an athletic person myself.
But you speak the truth.
I do speak the truth. I'm not called Slowfoot for nothing. But I see that this in our students who, though raised in Christian homes, their parents have instilled in them a sense that their participation in athletics is the most important thing in their lives. So we not only have students who come to Adidas College unprepared in many ways for the courses that will be taught in their religion classes and philosophy classes, they simply have had no Christian education, but we also find students who are lax in their discipline about worship, daily worship at the chapel, not to mention gathering weekly for the Eucharist. So I fault the parents in telling their children that the church is the institution that should be gracious and accommodating to every other activity in a student's life. And we end up elevating athletics to the level of religion. What is it that our heart clings to first for a sense of who we are, what we're worth? It is not in these students the faith into which they were baptized. It is their participation in sports. I don't want young Mr. Manley to take this personally, but he is a case in point.
MJ, I think that's puts, so to speak, the ball in your court.
I would say that athletics, maybe for some, would be the most important part of their life. I don't think that that attitude is promoted here at Adidas College. I think that it's a very important part of our scholastic career, along with education and worship. And I think that there's a theological basis for allowing sports to be promoted in the college and supported. And that would be, is not the body temple to the Lord? And discipline that we learn under the direction of coaches like Coach Victory over here.
Victory.
Yeah. And discipline that we learn to maintain while we're practicing and competing in sports carries over into other parts of our life, including our studies and our devotion to God, and I think that's a healthy practice to have. And I think that sports have promoted not a spirit of exclusivity, but of inclusivity, and everyone gathering around in the spirit of the winning and success and the large amounts of energy and recognition that the school has gotten for this. And everyone, I think, feels really good about what's been going on with the improved athletics program. And I think those individuals that make bad choices about drugs and eating and practicing and worshiping need some help, and they get some help, I think, a lot of times from their teammates. And these are people that would maybe be lost otherwise and now have a team to help them out, and they may be better off than if they didn't have that. So
maybe you should be a student preacher in the
team. Well, thanks, MJ. It sounds like there's a kind of coincidence there at Adidas College of what we mean by discipline as a physical discipline, a spiritual discipline, an intellectual discipline, and how somebody who can kind of learn to tone and strengthen and discipline their bodies might also have that kind of sense of self-discipline carry over into studies and carry over as well into a kind of spiritual discipline. So he sees no conflict. In fact, a kind of mutual reinforcement of those, whereas others here see a fundamental conflict between Christian virtues on the one hand and the kind of thirst for national glory and competitive excellence that sports fosters. And you've heard from these folks at St. Ignatius, and you heard the question, do you think they're going to be able to continue on this track in view of what you've heard and maintain their Christian character, or are they going to sell that Christian character bit by bit down the river for the sake of this kind of national athletic distinction? What do you folks think? What you want to say to these folks? Yeah, Mary.
I think that St. Ignatius' team.
Adidas.
What is it?
Adidas.
Oh, Adidas.
Yeah.
I think the team has relied heavily for their spiritual leadership by their coach. And I think that's one of the main influences. And the coach has instilled all of these virtues that we've talked about that exists on the team, and the team actually became nationwide acknowledged because of the character of the individuals. It wasn't so much that they won the game and how they won the game that was highlighted. It was the spiritual aspect of the whole team. And I a lot of it has to do with the spiritual leadership of the coach. And I think that's something that the school should continue to look for if the coach leaves and puts in another coach in his place. I think that's one of the key people.
Well, Dean Stiff, I understood you just been saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's not so much the people on the team that you find problematic, it's the people who didn't get on the team. And your problem is not only that there are all these folks grieving over the fact they didn't get on, but that there are a number of them who are showing behaviors that they didn't show before this whole drive for national recognition took place.
I guess there's two points that are related to that. One is that the body is a temple of the Holy Spirit is certainly true. I believe that fervently. But when we define that temple in athletic terms solely and in terms of the efficiency of that, well, then it makes all these persons who are not so proficient in sports feel like their bodies are not temples in the same way, that they are somehow inadequate. And so I can match story for story of the ones that the coach has matched or has mentioned with students who get cut from these teams and feel utterly worthless and feel inadequate and have no sense of the body being a temple of the Holy Spirit by virtue of that. And the second thing that I have to say is that sports can be an arena in which that happens. One of my primary concerns, though, is this whole worshiping, this idolatry of national glory. Why is that a good thing? Why is us achieving national prominence a good thing? I think that is going to create an energy in which we are going to be more and more focused on winning, 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 and the teams that the coach describes are going to be less supportive of that field throw person who is missing 10 free throws in a half. And those people are going to be cut, and we're going to be worshiping success. And where does it stop? Are we going to start point shaving? We're going to start getting into all sorts of corruption at the in the pursuit of winning at all costs. And there's a certain demonic spirit about winning that I think we need to counter and check very vigilantly.
No.
I don't know if this is countrywide, but living in the Chicago area and hearing about the world champion Chicago Bulls, they have an influence that is not altogether positive, but one I don't appreciate anyway. I used to like to go to high school games, and our school is about 400 students, and has been always competitive. Danny Issel graduated from the high school where I go. But when you go now, it's not as much fun for me as it used to be, because they emulate the Chicago Bulls. When they start the game, they turn the lights down, turn on the spotlights, and introduce the players just like the Chicago Bulls, with this world champion flair type thing, and it is certainly not lifting high team spirit and sport. It is lifting high, a conquering type image, and it's. And I don't know if that's every place, but it certainly has. Sport has changed in just the 20-some years that we've lived in this one place. And I was just wondering if others have that same experience.
Let's hear from some others. This is to pick up now on Dean Stiff's point and provide further examples, stories, evidence of sports having a kind of corrupting influence on. Yes, sir.
At the University of Texas there, they've just enlarged the stadium. And it's not for the students, but it's for big sky boxes. Are the big contributors, and it brings in lots of money, and the librarians and the staff there is, some librarians pay $15,000 a year, and that's all. And so sports is the most important thing there is, and it makes money.
But finally, you think it's kind of corrupting?
Oh, definitely.
of the kind of virtues that many folks here. Yes, ma'am, you have a point.
Well, our society is really at a point right now where we obviously reward the athlete. We pay them millions and billions in every professional sport we can do. And if we're holding that up there, we have to start somewhere by saying, how do we make this a less important issue in our society? We're in a society where our artists are starving, our poets are on the street, but if you can shoot hoops, you can make millions.
Yeah.
You know, and so where is that? And it has to start somewhere. And I do think there's good things in sports. I do think you can have a good coach. I do think you can grow and learn what it's like to be on a team. However, I think that as a Christian community, we have to start somewhere and say, no, it's not important that we have a champion gymnastics team or a champion basketball team.
MJ, you want to respond?
Actually, I don't think that's quite right. We do reward sports, our highest paid sports figures with large amounts of money. There's also a lot of really rich artists and really rich poets. Not a lot, the high end ones. There's a lot of poor athletes too, and there's a lot of poor poets. I mean, there's a lot. It's the high end gets a lot of attention, but there's a lot of athletes in this country that don't get any money first, or do it for a love of the sport or love of competition and team spirit. I mean, you can look at the high end of things, but I think we're talking more about the difference between where does that shift happen too. So I think you're partly right in that we kind of worship them, but I don't think that you could say that we don't reward artists in a similar way, because look at someone like Dale Chihuly and see how he makes millions and millions of dollars, gets paid tons of money to make glass.
But still, that's an exception. And I would still say of every professional basketball player, professional player, they make a lot. And I, you know, we all have seen tons of athletic stuff that say Bulls on it. You know, have we ever had sweatshirts that say Poet Laureate?
Okay, I think in a way we've kind of come to the crux here. It seems to me that MJ agrees that things can get carried too far for athletes. He just wants to suggest that the picture isn't all of the MJ making tens of millions of dollars, a lot of athletes who are starving, but the gentleman from the University of Texas gives us a picture of where St. Adidas could be 10 years down the line unless we're careful. I just want to hear from Coach Weedy, what do you think, what gives you the reason to think that given you've already had a taste through the NCAA recognition for men's basketball and the women's gymnastics, you've already had a taste of this. What's to keep this from kind of being the first move down a slippery slope where you turn out to be the University of Texas 25 years down the line? What can you do to reassure us that we're not going to be here at St. Adidas in that same dilemma?
Am I still Coach Weedy?
You're still Coach Weedy. Or you can be yourself.
The woman who said that a coach has a great responsibility is sure right. But I believe that we as parents and as citizens have a great responsibility too. Most of us fail. I got two, now they're grown kids, but I went through all that little league stuff and everything too. Most of us fail at being a part of the soccer program that meets on Sunday. Most of us, we didn't. But most of us fail at being a part of that soccer program that doesn't say every kid has to play. I mean, there are programs out there that insist upon that. There are programs out there that insist that if you've got 10 kids on a basketball team, five of them play the first quarter, the next five, it doesn't matter what the score is, but the parents say, get Johnny in there because we're going to lose if we don't have him in there, and we get him in there. We go to school board meetings where they have 110 guys on a football team, and if you know that sport, it costs $1,000 to suit up a football guy, and they're going to cut the tennis budget. I cut the tennis team, I mean. What does it cost? A pair of, what do they play in? Shorts. They're gonna, you know, they have to have a pair of shorts, and their parents buy their tennis racket. But we're going to cut that sport. But as opposed to cutting five football uniforms or making the kids buy their football shoes or something, we have made our own bed, I think. And now we're lying in it. And we can't, perhaps, I mean, who buys tickets to the Bulls? Who watches them on TV? Who buys whatever they? Who buys the Bulls jackets?
Yeah.
We do. Mm-hmm. That's one side, and then I'll stop. Coach. The other one is the coach has an incredible responsibility and an opportunity, and it's up to us to in the community we live in. The basketball coach wins. He's abusive to kids. I've seen him slap kids on the face after missing or throwing a pass away. But will the parents drive him out? Would they drive out the English teacher that slapped a kid for screwing up on a poem? But not the basketball coach because he's 20-4 every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it isn't sports. Sports are good. I mean, I could give you lots of all those stories I told you are true. I mean, they happen to us, not in basketball, but in track programs. And we could match story for story, and that's the point. There are good and there are bad, and where do we have a responsibility in that?
Okay, this is to throw the responsibility back on us. I think we want to hear one more word here from Emma Slowfoot.
I think you two have really hit on it, that it is, it isn't that the thing in and of itself, the sport, is evil or is bad, but it is our use of it. And it is the meaning that we endow it with. I think there are many wonderful virtues and gifts that students can learn participating in sports. And Mr. Manley here has mentioned some of them, including camaraderie and dependence and interdependence on one another, learning to know what it is to be incarnated, to be in a body, and to be glad of that, and to be healthy and to honor that. To strive for excellence, I think, is also a virtue that we, whatever excellence is for this person. My concern is that we have elevated sport to the level of what is ultimate and most important in our lives, and that we sacrifice much that is good, including our worship of God, sort of on the altar of the ultimate, which is the sport. And now in our college, our whole reputation is hung on our teams. And if the team should start to fail and falter, what will happen to our college? We have, whatever consequences we suffer, we will deserve, because we have elevated these teams to the highest level of meaning in our college. And I don't think we do young students a favor, pumping them up, giving them images of riches or fame, because very few of them are ever going to go on to anything professional, are ever going to sign a big contract. So sport that engages them in a joyful life of the body for the rest of their lives, I would say that becomes a servant to the gospel. I feel what's happened on this campus is that even our church relatedness and the gospel has become servant to sport. And what could be a better symbol of that than our teams, the cheerleaders, and all the fans heading out on Easter Eve for a basketball game, while a very few people, largely those who feel left out and clumsy and slow-footed, to follow the light of Christ through the night to the heart of the meaning of our life. That for me became, that's when I decided to get up and speak, was after the Easter Vigil, because that became symbolic of the whole disease that now is eating us. And was there ever a thought on the administration's part to say, no, our team will not participate in a game on the holiest night of the Christian year?
I think those convictions have to be taken seriously. I should mention, I'm not sure that the dean would want me to, that she had put in a strong bid that the summer theme be guide our slow feet, but we simply shortened that to include guide our... Now, I believe you had a response. You had several hands up, and I'm going to try to call on you in the order in which you had your hands up. But you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I don't think so much as it's anybody's fault. And we should, you know, say it's sports fault, it's religion part, and keep them separate. I think it is possible to have kind of a happy medium in between. And I think the whole root of the problem here is that we as a society, and, you know, St. Avitus as a school, is starting to glorify the actions of people. And we have to realize that everything we get in life, I mean, it's through hard work, but it's also through God. And He gives us everything. And we get all these, you know, demonic actions, you know, at the games and you know, emulate all these negative feelings because we glorify the people and we don't realize that it comes from God. And there is, when you realize that it comes from God, then you can have a happy medium, you know, between sports and between religion. This is possible.
I think what people are saying, if I hear them, is that that may be theoretically possible, the medium. But I think what we heard the dean say is that, you know, on Easter Vigil, you're one place or the other. And some of you have seen the movie Chariots of Fire, and you know that story about how this young Scotch Presbyterian who wouldn't participate on Sunday couldn't run in the heats because that was his position. Or to take a recent example, you mentioned the Bulls. The owner of the Utah Jazz didn't see Game 6 because it was on Sunday. He's a Mormon, a devout Mormon. And that was just not something he was willing to do. And I think the question is, in a way, even though a happy medium might be possible, if they want to go to the Sweet 16 in the NCAAs, they're going to have to play on Easter Vigil, which means, given the character of the school they are, beginning to give it away piecemeal. That was not the choice that the runner made in Chariots of Fire. It was not the choice that the owner of the Jazz made. So in our world, even though theoretically we'd like to drop happy mediums, is that really possible? I think you were first and then Ann. Dave.
Okay, as an economics and marketing major from St. Adidas, I think we've got a responsibility to follow the parables in the Bible and invest our talents well. And we've got this great monopoly of our mascot, the Saints, which, you know, we should follow that fine Jesuit institution in nearby Indiana, the guys with the gold-flecked helmets. And we should realize that we've got a lot of money to be made from our fine Saints team that we can make a profit from and channel back into our academic and theological institutions. And so we should, instead of tapering off on our efforts, we should increase them and push to move from Division 4C up to Division 1. And then we should make a contract with some cable companies and sell some television rights and build up our basketball and our football program and use the money to make more fine glass stained windows in the church.
And the church with the
lovely windows. Yeah, buy some better pews and things like that and control this marketing opportunity we have with our fine socially responsible religious techniques.
Okay.
What's wrong with that? It's an opportunity.
We got lots of hands. And I think Ann was first.
Well, back to a little bit what we were talking about earlier. I'm not a parent of a child at San Adidas or an athlete, but I wonder about the, for those who are parents and athletes, if there is a starting point for a sort of a resistance where this story from Chariots of Fire was in my mind too. I mean, we talk about, you know, how would that be if we were to go to the Easter Vigil instead of the game, and what would that mean? There just doesn't ever seem to be a starting point where someone says, no, I'm not going, like this individual did in Chariots of Fire, and I don't know how it is for the social systems for children who are barred from going to the Sunday or say it's a interferes with confirmation class on a week night or something like that. What does that do for them in school? And I don't really understand those pressures, but would there be a point to get started on some kind of resistance on an individual, family, athlete basis?
All right, let's follow this thread here because it kind of gets back to something that the coach said about the problem begins with the parents and begins with us. And that to kind of wonder what would happen if parents said, look, it's true, it's the semifinals of the Children's Soccer League here, but the game is happening Sunday morning at 10:45 and that's where we worship. Things like that. What about this is a possible way into this whole issue? I think you were going to comment on something.
Well, there are a couple things I was going to comment. To follow that thread, I can tell you from personal experience, from something so minor as even suggesting at the coaches' meeting that we not even start games on Sunday until at least 12 o'clock, that there was a resounding hilarity to that comment, with perhaps one other person supporting that idea. So it's going to start as a small voice, but it has to start. And we, as people of faith, I don't think we should be afraid of sports. St. Paul was not afraid to talk about an idol to the unknown God. That didn't scare him. Rather, he used that as an avenue to preach the good news. And if our society does lift up sports and look on sports figures as exalts them, what better to show them how to do that in the way Christ would do it? By not playing on Sunday, by playing and shaking hands with your opponent, by showing the love of Christ to your teammates and your opponents. So let's use it as an avenue.
One thought, we don't cancel games for church on Sunday, but there were no games scheduled on Super Bowl Sunday in our league.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
Perhaps a question from the folks in Syria. What is the purpose of intercollegiate competition? I mean, if sports is important, healthy body, all that kind of thing, why doesn't St. Adidas have the best intramural program possible? Why do you need intercollegiate competition and sports?
Coach, you want to start, and then we'll hear from MJ. Why intercollegiate athletics at all?
Why ice cream? I mean, I gave that analogy at the beginning. We don't need it. It's an extra thing. That's why they, in most schools, call it extracurricular. When it's done right, it's a good thing. The competition is healthy. The level of competition surely rises between schools to a greater level than it would within a school.
But is that the purpose of sports? I want to ask the purpose question. What's the purpose of sport? Is the purpose of sport to have competition rise to the highest level possible?
Yes. That's one of the purposes. The purpose of fitness is something different. The purpose of body development is something different. But if competition is tied to sports, then concepts of intense involvement, of discipline, of a commitment, of sacrifice, those kinds of things that athletes have to make. And I use those, I won't develop them now, but those in good context, not sacrifice at the expense of other things, but sacrifice, hey, I got to be down here every day for 2 hours and so on, and I'm not going to go drinking on Saturday night, those kind of sacrifices. If we do that, that kind of sacrifice and those kinds of commitments are commensurate with the level of competition, then the higher the competition, the more those disciplines are going to come into play, I think. I'm not going to work my butt off to beat my neighbor who's not very good. But I am if I got to beat the guy at St. Nike.
MJ, you want to respond to that?
Well, he's exactly right. I mean, to compete with other schools, you get to compete with some of the best athletes in the nation. And to be frank, it'd be boring to compete against the other people of the school. I'm better than all of them. Wouldn't require the kind of discipline that's required to compete against those other people. And I mean, why get a PhD? Why not stop at an undergraduate degree? Why get a master's? Why don't you just get a series of undergraduate degrees? I mean, why do you strive for anything? You need to have some goals, and once you've achieved those goals, you need to have goals that are beyond that, unless you want to move into something else. I mean, I think why bother trying to be like Jesus?
So basically, to answer Michael, what's the purpose of sport? It's in a sense to excel, meaning to be as proficient at your sport as you can possibly be, and that proficiency depends to some degree on the quality of competition that you have to bring out the best in your own endeavors. That's basically the suggestion here. And there's a hand up. I think it's Carol. I can't quite see.
If the purpose is competition and to achieve excellency in your own sport, why is an audience necessary? Perhaps the Christian colleges should build smaller stadiums that don't require any seating for an audience. Just let the players play and find out how good they are.
I coach cross country in real life, and the audience is so small that we introduce the fans to the players instead of the players to the fans.
It's interesting that he coached cross country, and I happen to know that MJ here in real life was a great cross-country runner for his university.
Do you have any eligibility left?
Runs all the way to Heart Lake and back.
It's true, there's not very many fans in the stands at track meets.
No, they're not many. That's why we do it.
The cross-country meets.
Yes. But first, you
I would like to. Oh.
You're first.
I would like to address the coach on a comment that he made concerning athletics as an extracurricular activity. I wonder how many substantive courses our football players take during fall semester. And how many of our football players are now not only within Lutheran schools or Christian schools, actually graduate even after 5, 6, and 7 years. The percentage in state schools, I believe, is very low.
I can answer that.
And I certainly know that, unfortunately, the gentleman from Texas isn't here anymore, but I know that within Texas, that average is quite low. And in most state institutions, it is quite low. Specifically for football scholarships, and I mean for football players. I'd also, in point two, since I want to make 3 points, point two, Texas perhaps is a very good example of what happens to coaches when they don't have winning teams. And sure, the pursuit of excellence is fine as long as the idea is that you're there for the children, but you yourself have mentioned, or for the students, you yourself have mentioned that what drives the machine are the alumni and the parents. Is the coach really in charge of the team? And then point three is what this gentleman mentioned. We have a bookstore at our university that makes money. The money for the bookstore doesn't go to the humanities. It doesn't go to support music and fine arts. It goes to support the football team. It goes to support the teams and the athletic programs that have just raised at our university $100 million last year for all kinds of activities. But yet they need the few dollars to run their programs that the bookstore generates.
Okay, Coach, you have been asked a number of questions. I think in order to let some other folks speak, sure. I'm going to just ask you to answer the first one about graduation rates, and then we're going to go to some of these other folks.
2 points about the graduation rate, and we'll talk about this later, and I won't do it now. You all should understand, as you look at sports, on the collegiate level anyway, that there are three major divisions in the NCAA, 1, 2, and 3, and they are drastically different. And we can talk about that if you want to later. The percentage of graduates at our school, and I can think of St. Olaf and Gustavus and Luther and Concordia and St. Thomas and PLU and those kinds of colleges that are all members of Division III, is probably about 90%. The number of kids that our attrition rate in students among athletes is much lower than it is among non-athletes. The kids that are in athletic sport or are in sports stay in school, but the difference is in what Division III and Division I is, and that's a real complicated thing. But just to know this, there are 370 Division III schools in the United States. 370, and that number is growing. There are about 100 Division I schools.
So, Coach, it sounds to me like, in a way, you're suggesting that Division III provides the best of both of the worlds we've been setting up here in opposition. That is, an intensely competitive arena, but one in which the schools that competition enhances other aspects of their communities, and in which you still have very high graduation rate. With Division I, though, in a way, sounds to me like you're suggesting that a lot of the difficulties we've conjured up here are real difficulties that we all ought to be worried about. And there you would agree with the dean here, well, two deans, who would, in a way, join with them in opposing Division I status.
Generally speaking, yeah. And that's the issue with where you are. I don't know where you are, but it's got to be a Division I school. And if I were that bookstore owner, I would be loud and clear in the president's office, and somebody else ought to be there, too. And that's partly our responsibility, to not let the football team do that. But, I mean, who sits and kind of acquiesces to that kind of, you know, bulldozing? Somebody does.
That's something we can talk about, too, on that.
All right. You were next, and then I believe you had your hand up, so go ahead.
When I was in college, I was confronted by a friend of mine with an assertion related to sports that I objected to strongly at the time, but there seemed to be some truth to it that made me nervous at the same time, and it's kind of stayed with me. And being a resident of Wisconsin and having observed the way that fans of the Packers have identified with the team, you know, seeing how their emotions in their whole lives kind of rise and fall with the victories and the defeats, it makes me wonder again. My friend asserted that competitive sports was nothing more than preparation for war. And there do seem to be a lot of similarities. And I still, from my own experience in sports, want to say that, well, there's something very healthy about it. That there are some good things that come through it, but one can also say that war also produces discipline and other good things among soldiers. But when we speak about beating our neighbor and rising, you know, raising the competitive level as high as possible, opponents, us, them, there are some things that are kind of unnerving. So I come back to the question that we were trying to get at before. Where's the line where you say this is no longer healthy? This no longer fits with our Christian values. If Jesus says that the greatest must become the least, I don't think that undermines striving for excellence in body, mind, and spirit. But in terms of the competition, there's a point at which we're no longer operating by our values. But I'll throw that out.
Thank you. Did these two gentlemen cover the point you were going to make, or?
I'm not quite sure, but I can just go by my own experience with my son. He just graduated a couple of years ago from St. John's. But they had a different philosophy of that probably a lot of people here have never even heard of. He played football, he played 4 years. Nobody's cut. They suit up 180 kids at one game, at home games.
It's a Division III school.
Division III school. Graduated 4 years with a lot of credits to go extra besides it. And most of the kids he knew graduated in 4 years, no problem. And I got a funny suspicion, or I'm pretty sure that most of the kids that are in the MICA probably all graduated within 4 years.
And probably not a single one of them didn't carry a normal academic load.
Absolutely.
Every term.
At St. John's, and I can only go by my own experiences, there was no practice missed. Because if you had a class or a lab or something like that, you were not allowed to miss that lab or practice, or maybe that lab or class. The practice was low on the priority, but one other thing that really does disturb me, and this is a problem probably from maybe from the TV, they're not turning it off, is in the last couple of years in that conference, there's been a large escalation or competition for students, and I don't know where that's going. Because they put in new facilities, Where is that going? You know, the only reason they put the facilities is to attract more students, and that obviously is the bottom line. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, like at St. John's, I don't know if some, probably maybe a couple of people have even played up there. It's, you know, that facility has been around for probably, when was that thing started? 18 something. And now, in just the last couple of years, to attract students as such, they've enlarged the football seating capacity, and they've taken away, I think, a lot of the nostalgia of the game and stuff like that. And it's a different place to play football.
Thank you. I think we're approaching the time. I see other hands, and that's fine because forums are not supposed to end conversations, they're supposed to start them. And I think that a number of folks here have helped us get a surer sense of the fundamental questions behind this narrative and the larger issues, like what really fundamentally is the purpose of sports? Where, if any place, can you draw the line such that you can maintain a kind of Christian character of the endeavor without crossing over to the point for competition for competition's sake, or to put it in the eloquent way that you put it in terms of the metaphor, when do you keep from thinking of sports as a way of preparing for war and instead regard it as a way of pursuing a kind of excellence that turns on a kind of discipline that is not turned to those kind of competitive ends for competition's sake, which can leak over easily into violence and so forth. And finally, where does the responsibility for maintaining those fine lines reside? In the schools, in the conferences, in the difference between Division I and Division III, or in the folks sitting here who are brothers and sisters and parents and children and so forth, and who finally are the ones who stand on the sidelines there already in grade school soccer games and either just enjoy the game and getting a chance to see everybody can play, or yelling at the coach because he's making substitutions instead of devoting everything to victory at all costs. So those are, I think, some of the questions which we didn't have when we came in and which will help to make our conversation after we adjourn even better. And for that, we owe all of you a great deal of thanks and special thanks to our panelists. And let's close by giving them a round of applause. Our next forum will be next Tuesday night. So we hope to see you all there.